month before, taking the dog out for our nails.
Sparkling waters.
The harbour is absolutely amazing.
Green city.
I think it's evergreen.
Different cultures.
The many languages and the enrichment through all the different cultures, faiths.
Auckland is very multicultural.
It's home and something's always happening.
It's home. Loving Auckland. Our diverse city. planetaudio.org.nz.
Dropping into a tube. Any surfer will tell you that's a dream. Dropping into a mental nightmare. La La Land. Fear. Nightmares. That's for loonies, psychos, maddos. Get the real picture about mental health. Planet FM every Tuesday at 12:30 on Take It From Us. Gain insights. Shatter myths. We've got the mental health stories you want to hear. Take It From Us every Tuesday at 12:30. Be there on 104.6 FM. Or listen online at www.planetaudio.org.nz/take-it-from-us or one word.
A while back, and that's actually for me is what really forms the basis of this Triple Crown, the corporation. As you say, Triple Crown is made up out of the Vatican, the City of London, and Washington DC. And Washington DC was the third part of the Triple Crown. And it all goes really back, like I said, to contract. Now, just to give you an idea of the flesh and the souls that the Pope was saying was his, that all goes back to the contract which your father, your parents actually enter into when they sign the birth certificate. Now, a lot of people don't know this. You know, a lot of people are starting to wake up to this, that their name on their birth certificate is in all capitals. Now, the birth certificate is supposed to be you being made a surety to a bond in the all capitals fictional name. And this is a fictional name that the corporation creates to enslave all of us that have birth certificates for the rest of our lives. And so these all capitals really stem from a thing called dog Latin, which used to be used back in the Roman days to trick and deceive, ironically. And this is what is now being used on our birth certificate, the all capitals name. Now, as you would know, a proper noun is not ever written in all capitals. A name normally has got the capital letter in the front and then the rest of it is in lowercase. And so what they've done and what the corporation has done is they've created this all capitals fictional name, which they then trick you into believing is your name, and for the rest of your life you pay taxes and rates and fines and all this kind of stuff, which is all about monetizing your name.
This is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth. On the phone this morning, I have Jacques Wendell, and he's from the Central North Island in New Zealand, and he's a researcher. He researches across a wide variety of subject matter, and he's on the phone at the moment because what happened was I did an interview with Dan Hermanson 5 weeks ago on the New Zealand 1835 flag, a flag that 32 Maori chiefs agreed on with King William IV of England. And in this process, it unfolded a whole story or backstory as to what is happening overseas, particularly coming from England. So as it happened, everybody, I ran into Jacques, who was also with a whole group of other people, and we were looking at emerging technologies that we needed to have as safe. Anyway, I have now found myself talking to Jacques. So I just want to say first, kia ora, Jacques. Thank you for wanting to be able to come in and share from your perspective.
Kia ora, Tim. Thank you so much for having me today.
Well, thank you, Jacques, for wanting to offer, because we've got a big program today. We've got a lot of information that we want to share.
Yes.
And you're also wanting people to have a pencil and paper ready.
Correct. Yes, I'd love for your listeners to do the research on what I'm saying. Don't take my word for it. Go and do your own research. The whole point of today is to whet your appetite to go and discover for yourself what the truth really is.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, going back to this 1855 flag, the United Tribes flag, and the proclamation from King William IV that New Zealand would remain a free country. And what it did was, in the comments, a person wrote in the comments something, and he said, "The Auckland City Council is a corporation listed on Dun and Bradstreet." So I thought, what's this? So I did a web search, and I found it on Wiki, and it then took me into the United States of America to the Securities Commission. Is that the word, Securities Commission?
Securities and Exchange Commission.
Thank you. And then it started to open up all sorts of things. And I thought, gosh, what's going on here? And I have heard, Jacques, for the last 20-plus years, that New Zealand is actually a corporation run by the City of London that has also got extensions to Washington, D.C., and the Pope's residence in the Vatican. However, I want to be able to ask you, do you know much about this? Because as a researcher, you're starting to connect a lot of dots. Can you maybe connect some dots for all New Zealanders today?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Dun and Bradstreet, because just to go back a little bit to the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, if you go onto the website and you type in Her Majesty the Queen in Right of New Zealand, you'll find financial statements of the government of New Zealand, right, and up to 2011. The same applies to Australia. Now, you've got to ask yourself, what is the New Zealand government doing on this? The U.S., the United States Securities and Exchange Commission website, and they were removed by the New York Stock Exchange, which, you know, that just did my head in when I saw that. When you go to the companies, I mean, the ministries in the government, like the Ministry of Justice, the New Zealand Police, the Defence Force, the Treasury, MB, which is the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment, and a whole lot of other ministries, then you'll find them on the Dun and Bradstreet website. Now, that is a website that holds the financial information of 265 million businesses around the world. And they actually refer to these ministries as companies with sales revenue. Now, why would a government department have sales revenue? And we're talking about, for the Ministry of Justice, you'll find $395 million in one financial year. The Office of the Ombudsman is also registered on the Dun and Bradstreet website, and they've registered $6 million. The New Zealand Police have an incredible amount of money in their financial statements on this website. Now, what are our government departments doing on a business website registered as companies?
Thank you. Now, you said this was up on there up until 2011, and then it was taken off?
Yes, so the New Zealand government information was not taken off. They just ceased to supply financial statements from 2011. And what had happened is the New York Stock Exchange had removed, and this is something I've got to go and dig into to find out why, both Australia and New Zealand were removed in the same year off that website. And that's got to do with the New Zealand government, but then, like, the Dun and Bradstreet side of it is to do with the actual government departments.
Okay, because we've got a situation, as I said, that the City of London is an entity within itself.
Yes.
And there's a lot that we don't know about this. And it goes back a long time, too.
And this is something I didn't realize. When people refer to the City of London, I would think City of London. I didn't know there was a City of London within the City of London.
That's right.
Yeah.
Westminster and Whitehall, and it's all part of a commercial enterprise. And also, I would say that with Whitehall, there's a defence establishment as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this goes back way back, and I know that when New Zealand was first colonialised, for want of a better word, when the sailors came from overseas to New Zealand, by 1835, the Maoris, or just prior to that, the Maoris had been very upset because after Captain Cook had really put New Zealand on the map, Abel Tasman, the Dutchman, didn't, but Captain Cook did. And then we had whalers come, we had sealers, we had all sorts of traders, etc. And there was quite a rough element of, should we say, Europeans coming to Aotearoa, New Zealand, and hence the Maori tribes started to be very concerned and consequently supposedly did a deal with King William IV, and New Zealand was proclaimed a free and independent country in 1835. And James Busby, the British translator, he was there in 1835, and then Captain Hobson came out from London and the Treaty of Waitangi was written. And the Maoris sort of agreed to it, and that old flag, the white flag with the red cross and the stars and a smaller red cross, was eliminated, pushed out of the game, and the Union Jack, the British flag, was raised at Waitangi, and the end result is that supposedly New Zealand was sort of taken over.
Yeah, well, this is because from what I understand, there was a counterfeit flag that was actually brought down, but the actual original flag was never lowered.
Thank you, yes, this is true.
And so that's really important because it means that that independence, it still stands today.
Well, this is where the big contention comes in, and this is what we're sort of digging, and this is why we want people with their pen and paper to be able to go out and look at this, because New Zealand has carried on from 1840, and we don't have a New Zealand proclaimed Day of Independence from the British, whereas Australia has Australia Day on the 26th of January every year. In America, it has the 4th of July. New Zealand has nothing. We have the Waitangi Day, but that's in relationship to the treaty, but it has no relationship to how New Zealand can actually then start charting its own course of independence. And some say it was around about 1947 or something like that. Anyway, Jacques, we wanted to be able to get to the base of this, and you say way back the Magna Carta was an important document. Can you take us back quickly into that and see if you can bring us forward?
Yes, absolutely. So Magna Carta is very, very important, and the reason for that is because Magna Carta was really the first document that kind of protected individual rights, whereas the king was just running roughshod over the barons and over everyone. This was the first attempt to say to the king, look, you can't do what you want to do, and you can't just carry on warring against France and taxing us. We are going to put a stop to this. But when you go back 2 years, something very, very important happened. When King John was warring against France, he was losing battles, he wasn't doing well, and the French were getting stronger and they were basically mobilizing against him. He knew this. He also knew that the barons were getting really upset from all these taxes. They were on the brink of rebellion. And then what happened was the Pope sent one of his representatives over and said to King John, look, you're in a whole lot of trouble here, and I will protect you, and I will sort this out for you, but if you don't cede your crown to me, you're going to get taken out either by the barons or by the French king. So that was quite important, because what he then did is he actually went to the Church of the Templars in Dover and physically gave his crown to this representative, and his name was Pandulf. So that was on the 15th of May 1213 when he went to the Church of the Templars, and he placed his crown in Pandulf's hands and took the oath of fealty to the Pope. I've explained to you now why he felt he had to do that. And fealty is a feudal tenant or vassal sworn loyalty to a lord, in this case the Pope. So King John also handed the legate a document stating that for the atonement of his sins against God and the Church, that he surrendered into the hands of Pope Innocent and his successors forever, that's really important, he handed it forever, the kingdoms of England and Lordship of Ireland, to hold them henceforth as fiefs of the Holy See, the Pope.
Right, and then you said then 2 years later the Magna Carta came in, is that right?
That's right, and what then happened was that King John signed it under duress, and I think it was a few months later he said to the Pope, look, this is what's happened, And because the Pope was now in charge, the Pope annulled Magna Carta, and it was only brought back in, I believe, in 1225 by King John's son, King Henry, but didn't have the Article 61, which was very, very important, because that Article 61 was what gave the people those individual rights that the king couldn't just run roughshod over them.
Okay, well, we move on further until we find that Henry VIII, back in 1533, which is considerable time later, introduced a new state religion to the English, and that was following the Protestant line, and they deleted the Catholics, and there's lots of wars and lots of fighting across England at the time. And England essentially stopped being Catholic around about 1791, and yet I guess the fact is that lack of communication in those days, even though there was a printing press, they didn't have what you call a big print run, for want of a better word. And so a lot of people didn't know anything what was really going on, because it was only through proclamations from royalty and from the elite information used to get out. So
the thing for me with that is that fundamentally all law is contract. So the Pope had a contract with King John forever. So I now question whether anything that the English did was actually lawful, due to the fact that that contract still was supposed to stand forever. That was what King John, that was the oath. It was ceding his crown basically forever to the Pope. Now, it doesn't matter what anybody does after that, that contract still stands.
Yeah, well, I think this is a big one. And again, now, when you do research, you find that the City of London and the Vatican and Washington, D.C. are all part of a unified group.
Yes.
That's in the sort of European orbit, for want of a better word.
Yes.
And I'm still endeavouring to work it all out. But what's happened is that these contracts that you say, can you clarify, because I'm wanting to bring it forward very quickly.
Yeah, well, this is, if you go into the Unum Sanctum, it really explains everything really well. And it was a decree or a papal bull that was done quite a while back, and that's actually, for me, is what really forms the basis of this Triple Crown, the corporation. As you say, Triple Crown is made up out of the Vatican, the City of London, and Washington, D.C. And Washington, D.C. was the third part of the Triple Crown. And it all goes really back, like I said, to contract. Now, just to give you an idea of the flesh and the souls that the Pope was saying was his, that all goes back to the contract which your father, your parents, actually enter into when they sign the birth certificate. Now, a lot of people don't know this. You know, a lot of people are starting to wake up to this, that their name on their birth certificate is in all capitals. Now, the birth certificate is supposed to be you being made a surety to a bond in the all capitals fictional name. And this is a fictional name that the corporation creates to enslave all of us that have birth certificates for the rest of our lives. And so these all capitals really stem from a thing called Dog Latin, which used to be used back in the Roman days to trick and deceive, ironically. And this is what is now being used on our birth certificate, the all capitals name. Now, as you would know, a proper noun is not ever written in all capitals. A name normally has got the capital letter in the front, and then the rest of it is in lowercase. And so what they've done and what the corporation has done is they've created this all capitals fictional name, which they then trick you into believing is your name, and for the rest of your life you pay taxes and rates and fines and all this kind of stuff, which is all about monetizing your name.
Well, thank you about this, because I don't usually get traffic tickets, but recently I got one. Everything was written in block capitals.
Yes.
My name, my address on the envelope, and when I opened up the sheet, there it was, all in capitals. So these are little questions that I want to ask and keep on asking. So thank you very much for that, Jacques.
Just a little story on that one. I actually phoned the Department of Transport, Land Transport, or whatever that they call themselves now, and I said to them, look, there's a mistake on my driver's license. You've written it all in capitals name. I said, that's fiction. That's not a proper noun. It's not a name. And they said, oh, you know, we do it for everyone. I said, well, that's wrong. And they said, no, we do it because it's easier to read. And I said, no, it's not, because scientifically I've actually gone into it. It's not actually easier to read. You're lying to me. Why are you doing this? And they said, they couldn't give me an answer.
Okay. Okay, well, laying into them, telling them they're lying.
Because it's the same with your passports. This passport is in all capitals.
Yeah, we want to get to the passport later on in the program.
Yes.
So, well, look, we've got the situation now where that things are happening in the UK and it's now become a Catholic country and the Queen is acknowledged as the Supreme Governor of the Church of England still today, being Anglicans. And I've got a story around that as well. And people do realise that back in 1606, just before that, Guy Fawkes was a Catholic who was involved in a gunpowder plot and he wanted to blow up the British House of Parliament because they had moved over to becoming Protestants.
Mm.
And he was caught and he was burnt at the stake and it was a horrible thing. And,
yeah.
And when I was a kid, we used to have a bonfire on every 5th of November and we'd have a guy on the bonfire, which was an effigy of a man and in clothes and standing about 6 feet tall, and we'd burn them on the spire. And and evidently it happened in England until fairly recently too, and we don't do it now. But what it is it shows that we've got some very, very strange, shall we say, habits. But then but then from then on, from 1660 onwards, the Royal Society was founded by King Charles II. And this is when all the British at that particular time were in the ascendancy when it came to looking at the world. They had ships going out and they're going around down the coast of Africa and they're going towards India. And on the other side, at the time in 1642, Columbus had started going to America, etc. And we realise that the British in particular start to organise because they thought, well, we're going to take over all these lands.
Mm.
And the Spanish were sort of had to have South America or took it, but the British took on a lot of Africa and a lot of India and then going up into China, etc. And it was all part of then the ascending Dutch East India Company, but they were all organising. And so back in Britain, from what I can gather, the elite and the merchants and the money people and the bankers decided to have a cartel in the city of London, and that's when they started to put everybody who was in every country, they started to say, right, we're going to lock them down, for want of a better word.
The other thing, the interesting thing there is if you just go back a few centuries, you discover that the doctrine of discovery, which has provided the legal and the political justification for European monarchs to conquer and claim lands inhabited by indigenous people. So this was the start of all this kind of colonization, and it all started with a number of papal bulls, Catholic laws, issued by the Vatican in the 15th and 16th centuries.
Thank you. Now, the lawyers and law came into it too, because when you have lawyers, they spoke in a language that the commoners couldn't really understand. So when the elite could always control the narrative in those days, because most of the commoners and serfs really couldn't speak English or didn't have the ability to write. And so there was a case there, and I want you to talk about the Temple Bar and the law courts. Can you?
Yes, and this is something that really shocked me. I started looking at our own courts and I started doing a bit of digging, and I went to the Bar Association, and there was a lovely lady that came back to me with an email saying, because I was asking about the oath, because I've asked a few people about the oath, but they're very secretive about the oath, don't want to share the oath. And I'm like, well, what is the big problem? In 1957, why don't you want to tell us what your oath is? It's strange. So I went and thought, well, let me do some digging. And then she came back and she said, look, here's the oath. And she gave me the oath and also the ceremony that the lawyers and solicitors and barristers, they all, the oath that they make to be able to be accepted to the bar. And what happens is they go into the ceremony en masse and they end up having to bow to the judges. And this really kind of shocked me a little bit, because if you go back into biblical times, you look at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they refused to bow to the king, because when you bow to someone, they become your master. Now, for a lawyer and a barrister or a solicitor to have the judge, which is supposed to be the adjudicator, to be the master of the defense, I just think to myself, how's that justice when you're not on an equal footing with the prosecutor? But you're actually now the judge, and the court is kind of in control of the one person that's supposed to be fighting on your behalf.
Okay, carry on, please.
And that just shocked me. I just thought to myself, whoa, there's something wrong with our justice system if there's no equity like that. And the other thing with our justice system is that they do not accept any kind of common law ideology or wording or anything like that. They've pushed that right out. Now, that is going back to Magna Carta. The old English common law is still in our Imperial Laws and Application Act 1988. And they've tried to kind of push that to one side, because what that does is it gives your individual rights back to your people. And, of course, they don't want their slaves, because that's what we are when we, you know, with the birth certificate, we become slaves. We become surety to the bond. We don't have any rights. So they don't want us to have any rights. And what the old English common law does, it gives the individual rights back to the people.
Okay, carry on.
So I was quite shocked by this. I was, you know, I thought to myself, whoa, what's going on here? And that's when I really started digging into it, and I started understanding that the courts, from what I can see, it's really stacked against the defendant. And the other thing, too, is when you go into a court, what people don't realize is when you actually go and sit in the court, you'll see that the barristers or lawyers or whatever will come in and they'll bow up to the judge and then they'll go and sit down. Okay. And what happens is that when you come as a defendant to the bar, when you cross that bar, right, which is the area between the gallery and the actual court, when you cross that, you have contracted with that court, whether you like it or not. The other thing is when you walk into the dock, you've contracted with that court. And what you've done is you've basically thrown your rights away, your inalienable rights that are given to you by your creator when you're born. You put that, you throw that out, you throw that to the one side, and you don't have those rights anymore, and you are now under their control when you walk into that dock. So you, as a man or a woman that have rights, suddenly you don't have any rights when you walk into that court.
Okay, now, thank you very much, Jacques. I just want to throw in something here so that people can research. Jordan Maxwell.
Yes.
If you can research Jordan Maxwell and Admiralty Law.
Yes.
He'll explain what Admiralty Law is. He'll go right into what is a birth and all sorts of wonderful things to actually empower you. So, thank you, Jacques. We're doing quite well, and I'm really pleased.
Mm.
Yeah. So there's a thing called the Temple Bar. Do you know much about that? Because originally the Temple Bar was literally just a bar or chain between two posts next to the Temple Law Courts. And this became a huge stone gate, and there were eventually eight of these gates built so the elites could restrict control trade within the city of London, because it was smaller then. And this is a small area in London, I think, that they now known as the controlling city of London. And they were taken down during the 19th century, but each stone was numbered and kept in storage until 2004, when they just rebuilt the Temple Bar in London. And you can actually check all this information out if you wish to, and that is in wakeupkiwi.com. wakeupkiwi.com. What is the Crown City of London?
That's a very good resource there, just right there.
Yeah, what is the Crown City of London? Yeah, so superb resource there. So, Jacques, thank you very much. We're moving along here. So, at the moment, we are ascertaining, wanting to work out why we're in a situation that we are, shall we say, bonded to a system that's based out of London. And we're wanting to know a little bit more about this, because from what I can gather, this Crown City of London is controlling things right up until today. We're not allowed to talk about it. You have worked in local councils, and you yourself realize that there are certain gag orders that you cannot speak against certain information, and you've experienced that. And I know that most people today have gag orders on them if they go and work for a government department, or if they work in central government or local government. I know that the astronauts for NASA in the USA, when they go up in space, they have gag orders too. They're not allowed to talk about what they see that's outside the norm. And so gag orders are everywhere.
Yes, absolutely. And just to come in with what you were saying about the council, you've got to be very careful, and this is just a microcosm of, I believe, central government, is that you cannot just say and do what you like, right? You are under And this is, it's very important. I'm just going to digress for a second. When a police officer or constable says to you, do you understand? They're not asking you if you comprehend. They're asking you if you are standing under them.
Okay.
It's authority. So when it comes to the council, you are under the, in my case, was the Local Government Act and a whole lot of other acts. You are under that. So you cannot now speak freely because you have subjected yourself to the gag that these acts put upon you. So you're not a free man or woman that you can just speak and when you see something that's wrong, bring it out into the light. There's also what they call public excluded, where they have meetings where you can't, it's not discussed where the public can actually hear it. It's outside of public and you cannot share any of that information to the public. Even if that is really crucial information the public shouldn't know about, in my background, having been a journalist, it was very difficult for me because I thought to myself, well, this is in the public interest to know. They have to know this. This is the rate, you know, the rate money that's being used for things that they should know about. This is supposed to be transparent, and yet there was no transparency. And so that caused a lot of inner turmoil for myself because I was representing the people, and the people were trusting me to pull these things out and bring it into the light. And I was gagged, unable to do it because they would then threaten you with lawyers. And we're talking top lawyers out of Wellington.
Yeah, thank you for this, because I went to a meeting, Billy Tika Hika, of the New Zealand Public Party, an extension of Advance NZ, last week, and I asked Billy, I said, are you aware of parliamentary privilege? Mm. That if you can go into Parliament, is it true that you are allowed to speak, as long as it's not obscene or anything like that, are you allowed to say whatever you wish in Parliament on once Parliament is open? So you stand there and you address the Speaker and all members of Parliament. And he said, yes, I can. And I questioned that because we will soon find out if this is a fact, that can he speak his mind or does he have to fulfill certain criteria that is based around a gag?
Yeah, and I would be very surprised if he was able to do that because, like I say, in my experience, I wasn't able to do that and I know that for a fact.
Okay, thank you. Now, can I go right back? You said that King John actually surrendered to Pope Innocent and allowed the crown to be contained or taken over by the Pope. And yet, when I look here, I see that Queen Elizabeth is the so-called monarch, that Queen Elizabeth, the reigning
monarch.
Queen Elizabeth.
I have those moments too, don't worry.
Thank you, bro. Queen Elizabeth II, the reigning monarch, who currently is the Queen of the British Commonwealth, holds the title of Defender of the Faith and Supreme Governor of the Church of England. And the Church of England is different, so different from the Catholic Church. So this is a story now. We have her and the City of London, they're tied together, and I'm just wanting to know where this lies with the Pope. Okay, I'll cut in. Because back in 2003, I was teaching at the Auckland Institute of Studies here in Auckland, and we were just off Key Street, and we heard that the Queen was going to be doing a walk down at the America's Cup Village, an area in the Port of Auckland, and she was going to do a walk for crowds to be able to greet her and she greet them. And so I positioned myself with my students, because I had a good number of students. A lot of them were from Asia and some from South America, and I took them down and I said, here's an opportunity for us to see the Queen of England and the Queen of our British Commonwealth. So I was standing down there, and I was standing most probably about 5 metres from the walkway, and along comes the Queen, and she was dressed in lilac, and she was just waving and talking, and then all of a sudden, behind me, on a seat on a raised area, stood two men dressed in dark suits, white shirts, and they called out, Your Highness, Your Royal Highness, Queen and Sovereign of the Anglican Church and Supreme Governor of the Church of England, we beseech you, we want you to make a statement. We want you to state that the Pope in Rome is satanic, that he is part of Satan's world, and we want you to condemn the Pope. And I thought, wow. And this was happening right in front of me. And I was looking at her and looking at them, and I think, what was going on? And they called her to make a statement that the Pope had to be eliminated. And she was looking up at them, and I thought, whoa. And in that moment, I did an invocation of violet light to come down over the Queen. And there it was. We were caught in this, and then she sort of made a slight nod of her head, and then she carried on walking. And I thought to myself, that's interesting.
That is interesting, because the Triple Crown was started as a testamentary trust in 1302, pursuing to papal bull called Unam Sanctum, the holy singularity or sanctified unity. So Pope, excuse my pronunciation, but Pope Boniface the VIII announced that he would depose King Philip IV of France if need be, and issued the bull Unam Sanctum, One Holy, the most famous papal document of the Middle Ages, affirming the authority of the Pope as heir of Peter and vicar of Christ over all human authority, spiritual and temporal. And the Pope claimed that he owned all land, all flesh, and all, wait for it, souls. Right? So this is the thing that confounds me, is because if you look at it, Christ was supposed to have died on the cross. The veil was rent, right? And that was the symbolic thing that happened, which basically meant that we now had free access to God the Father because of him dying for our sins. Now the Pope comes along and says, no, you've got to come through me to go to the Father, right? I am the representative of Christ. That doesn't make sense to me at all. And this is why he believes, and I believe that they believe it till this day, that they still own all land, all flesh, and all souls. Now, how can a Pope own a soul?
I know. Nobody knows how souls are made. Only one being knows who souls are made. It's God.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think this goes back to the fact that John gave his crown, so the Pope doesn't want to listen to anything to do with any of the English monarchs, because for him, they under him. And he is the supreme representative in his mind of Christ, and you still have to go through the Pope. You still have to go and do, you know, the things that the Catholic Church, the people do, you know, go tell the priest about their sins and then get absolution and all this kind of stuff. Whereas actually, because of Christ, we can go straight to the Father. We don't have to go through a man or man-made bodies to be able to have a relationship with God the Father.
Okay, thank you very much. Because I saw about 2017, there was a YouTube video, and there's some statements made that the Catholic Church still said today that human beings cannot have a personal relationship with God. They have to use the Catholic Church as a middleman, as an intermediary to go to God. So, and it's been since taken down. It was really interesting because I saw it, and the Pope was actually saying it in Latin, and there was English subtitles underneath. So we have that happening, but in the meantime, the City of London, because it's had the British Navy and etc., they could still just carry on doing whatever they wanted to do anyway, because the Pope can't actually put an army together. And so I think this is a very important thing for us to...
Well, this is where the Washington, D.C. comes into it.
Thank you.
Because obviously America's got a massive military.
Yes.
And that's why they needed the United States. And that's why they actually bankrupted the United States in 1933. And that's another story for another interview, because that becomes really interesting. When you realize what happened to America, this all makes total sense.
Right. There's a book by Edward G. Griffin.
Well, you see, Edward G. Griffin goes into the whole Federal Reserve, which is another unbelievable story of deceit. And I like to use the word skullduggery because that is exactly what it is.
Okay.
And he explains it. And you can go and punch in Edward G. Griffin, The Creature of Jekyll Island.
Thank you.
And there's a YouTube. And I will say to your listeners, if you do anything, go and listen to that because that will open up your mind to what is actually really going on and how, when they talk about fiat money, why they talk about fiat money.
Excellent. Well, okay, we can go back into this. Now, I want to come back again, but first, I'm speaking with Jacques Wendell. He's from Central North Island. He's a researcher of many topics, as you can hear, and I just want you to pay attention and do your own research and then assist us in bringing about positive change in this country and, I trust, a new paradigm for the future of all children. Okay. Because there's a lot of strands here.
Yeah.
Now, you said somewhere along the line, Queen Elizabeth had Elizabeth II, and then it was changed from Elizabeth 1-1, or II, to Elizabeth 2, lowercase nd. Can you tell us about this?
Yes. Now, this is really interesting, too, because this also, if you go into the Royal Titles Act 1953, you will see that they changed Queen Elizabeth the second with the numeral numbers, which represents a monarch, right? Throughout the ages, monarchs were represented by the numeral letters.
Roman numerals, eh?
Roman numerals, yes. So they changed, in 1953, they changed her name to, or her title, whatever you wanted, styles and titles, to Elizabeth the second written out. So the second, T-H-E, and then capital S, and then lowercase E-C-O-N-D, the second. Suddenly, she's Elizabeth II. She's not Elizabeth with the Roman numerals. And then it's by the grace of God of the United Kingdom, New Zealand, and her other realms and territories, Queen, Head of the Commonwealth, Defender of the Faith. And the funny thing is, in 1974, they decided to remove the United Kingdom. So now there's no more United Kingdom in that whole styles and titles. Now, you've got to ask yourself, if a monarch is referred to in Roman numerals, who is this new person or this new entity that has not got any Roman numerals? Is that even a monarch?
Yeah, thank you for that, because I think it's very important to realize there that the Latin language and the Greek language had no lower case.
Yes.
It was all uppercase in those days.
That's right.
Yeah, thank you for that. Now, you see, dear listeners, there are many, many peculiarities in what's happening in the world, and particularly in our relationship to understanding the branch of government that rules us here, and I say rules, in New Zealand. And you can maybe have another look at things, because in the back of the latest New Zealand passport, you will see, the inside cover, you'll see a picture or a graphic of New Zealand, a map of New Zealand, and the North Island is there, and also the South Island. And the North Island, across it, has got NZ within the North Island and has nothing else whatsoever, whereas I would have thought that they would have had, in big letters, New Zealand across the whole page.
Yeah, both the islands.
That's right, and so a lot of people in the South Island are wondering why they haven't been covered. So that's just another thing for you as researchers, because what it is now is that we are depending on everyone to participate this, because in participatory democracy, we want you to be able to be more involved in your life, because I have heard the old shocking truth that with the birth certificate, when we are born, we are worth something like $1 million. There is an actual sum of money attached to us. And we want you to do the research on this as well, because we essentially are, in many ways, a chattel of this particular city of London. So thank you for that, Jacques. And
you know, if you're happy to have me on your program again, I will actually dig into the detail of that, because there is a lot more. This is like an onion. And you peel the layer upon layer upon layer. It goes. You have to peel it down. And so for me, this first program, or if we do again, but this one was, for me, was like an overview to give people an idea of what is going on and to really kind of encourage people to go and do their own research, because everybody can bring their puzzle, to the picture. So, you know, I can't do everything, you can't do everything, but as, you know, if we come together as the people of New Zealand and we all do our bit and we all bring our pieces of puzzle to the picture, we will see what has really been going on. The beauty of New Zealand is, like you said, is 1835, is those chiefs having signed that independence that was there in 1835 and that flag was never lowered, which means that none of the stuff actually pertains to us legally or lawfully.
I hear you. This is very, very profound, and I'm thinking, let's go New Zealand, let's see what we can do. Now, there's numerous things have happened in my life which I find is quite synchronistic, etc., but I wouldn't be able to go back. In 1967, New Zealand's financial sector brought in the decimal currency. In 1967, we changed our money from pounds to dollars. And we started with $100, $50, $20, $10, and then we all went down to 5 cents and 2 cents and 1 cent. Well, we've got rid of the 1 cent and 2 cents and 5 cents, and now we've got a 10-cent piece, a 20-cent piece, and a 50-cent piece, and they all had an engraving of Queen Elizabeth II on one side of that coin. And we have eliminated our paper dollars, $2 and $1 for coins, having coins instead. But in actual fact, what we did do way back in 1967, we had a $100 bill. And a $100 bill in those days could buy a whole lot of things. Mm. And we've still got this $100 bill 53 years later, and it buys nothing. That's right. And New Zealanders haven't called that one out. They're just not calling it out. We have been diddled again in the currency market. We need a $500 bill.
Mm.
We need to be able to do that. I think I'd like to see some clever people in New Zealand put another New Zealand icon and put out a pretend copy that's made of paper just to allow people to see that what a $500 bill could look like with lovely graphics. So again, what it's saying is that we have been lulled into a false sense of security. We have become complacent. Some would say we've become lazy. And we cannot become like hobbits. Because when we saw Lord of the Rings, only two hobbits really made the effort. All the rest of the hobbits were too busy focusing on minutiae, on the little stuff, on the small stuff. They didn't see the big picture.
That's right.
And we need to see big picture stuff. That's what we need.
And we need unity, because we're all off doing our own little thing and building our own little kingdoms. But at the end, all those little kingdoms are going to be taken away from us by this corporation, because they control everything at the moment. And if the people don't rise up, see, this is the thing. They fear us because they're the 1% and we're the 99%. If the 99% gets our act together, then 1%'s got no power.
Agreed. I mean, I've been involved in this for, I don't know, 40-odd years, endeavouring to instill some spark of imagination, of courage. Let people realise that, boy, we're in a situation at the moment, we have to wake up very, very urgently, for want of a better word. And we've got election coming up in the next few days.
Yep.
Will New Zealanders make the right choices? Because I'll tell you something now. I have voted for maybe 5 or 6 different parties in the course of my life, and I'm not going to vote for any of those parties that are now in Parliament.
No.
And people need to listen to that one and say, okay. So there's another thing too that I think we're getting close.
I just want to go back to what you just said about the ones that are in Parliament now. The ones that are in Parliament now are the ones, and I know this is going to sound a little bit probably contentious, but so be it. But the ones that are in power now have allowed unsafe technology, right? Now, if you go and do the research on 5G, you will find very, very clearly, this is peer-reviewed studies. There are literally thousands of them saying there needs to be a moratorium. You need to stop. You need to do testing on this stuff, because we are going down a very, very, very dangerous path. Now, our politicians and the parties that are in power right now, they've consented to that 5G being rolled out en masse throughout our streets. And a lot of people don't know that 5G will be coming from space too, but we won't go down there. The other thing that they are going to be consenting to is mandatory vaccinations. Now, the thing is, we don't realize what is in those vaccines. And I can tell you now, you've got nanotech and you've got chips and you've got all sorts of technology that we have no idea what the effect will be on us. We already see bees falling out of the sky, right, with the frequencies that are being beamed all over the show. There is the Earth's magnetic field is being affected by this. People have no idea that the magnetic north is tracking south at quite a rapid rate as far as that's concerned. And scientists believe that the magnetic north and south is about to flip. They don't know what that means. They don't know what the implication of that is going to be. So why are we putting hundreds of thousands of, they're talking about 100,000 to 120,000 satellites going up into the low ionosphere that's going to be beaming 5G down onto Earth. You know, it just boggles because what happened to Mars was it lost its magnetic field. So the magnetic field, what that does is it protects life on Earth from the radiation from the sun. You remove that magnetic field, we are done for.
Okay, thank you. Yes, because we have to realize that all this technology, we're not getting independent tests on it. We are only getting the telcos or the corporations that are producing this technology, they are doing the tests, and we need independent testing.
And it's all about money, because if we had, as a collective, if we had enough money, we could buy the instruments that we needed to actually test all of this stuff. But it's you know, the people that are concerned about it are battling to get the resources together to get the instruments so we can prove beyond any doubt that this radiation is well above what the levels, especially the cumulative effect. Because if you look at 5G, it's not just 5G. It's 3G, 4G, 5G that are operating, all three still operating. And then you've got the Internet of Things, you've got Bluetooth, you've got Wi-Fi. All these things are working together. It's a cumulative radiation effect. It is massive, and it is affecting us today. People with electro-hypersensitivity have to go literally away out. I know of a guy in South Africa that has to travel to a certain area every night and go and sleep in his car because he cannot sleep in his own home because of the effect that that radiation is having on him.
Thank you for this. I think it's very important that we realize here that the government is in lockstep with the technology companies.
Yes.
Our elected representatives are not talking this conversation. This whole conversation we've had today, Jacques, is not on any of the politicians' lips at all. They are gagged from talking about this. On an individual, you might get them to say, yes, there is something else, but we can't do it because the party says we cannot speak against this. This is what we're dealing with.
Yes.
And it's very important for us to realize that the government now, our elected servants, are not actually doing the bidding because they're locked into another agenda. Now, quickly, I just want to be able to mention that, and it goes right back to starting off, is New Zealand a corporation of the City of London? Australia is too, and you said you were born in Southern Africa and your father had to sign your birth certificate.
Yes.
And you found out that South Africa is part of this as well, and we know that America is part of the British corporation. They may have lost the war of independence against the UK, but evidently the City of London still calls the shots in America. But I heard that recently that Donald Trump, maybe about 18 months ago, went to London and saw the Queen, and he was doing something to restore America's independence from the UK because in a trooping, not trooping of the colour, in a ceremony in which the Queen and Donald Trump were standing in front of all the Coldstream Guards, and it was a very prestigious ceremony. Donald Trump walked out in front of the Queen.
Yep, and I remember that.
And she followed. And this was a signal to the world, to those who were waking up, to realize that America was asserting its independence from Britain. And we have now Australia having to do the same thing. And we in New Zealand are waking up to this as well.
And the funny thing that you mentioned that, because what a lot of people don't even see is with this whole COVID thing, where the Prime Minister was doing all the, giving all the information and all the rest of it, if you look at the flag right next to her, it had a yellow little tassel.
Golden tassel.
Yes. Now, what a lot of people don't realise is that golden tassel is actually the braid of commerce in maritime law, Admiralty law. That is the braid of commerce. Now, what is that Admiralty law braid of commerce doing on our flag?
Well, I questioned that too some time ago, and I didn't get the answer that I wanted. Yeah, Jacques. Well, look, I'll tell you what. This is fantastic. I want to say thank you very much for your diligent research and information that you're doing constantly.
Mm.
Well, all it is that the human race now realise that we're at multiple tipping points. We're at an ecological tipping point, a societal tipping point, an economic tipping point, and then there's the drums of war going on.
Yes.
And so what we really know, if we want to love our children, if we want to love our pets and love all animals and the environment and our neighbours, love our neighbour as thyself, then I think it's very important for us here, for all listeners, to just raise yourself from your chair and start making an effort on behalf of a greater whole. Service to self is over.
Yes.
We need to be able to be working for a better world and a better tomorrow, because when it's too late, it's too late.
Well, that's the thing, and really, you know, the canary in the mine for me is Victoria in Australia now, and what is happening with how the police are grabbing people by their throats and things like that. I mean, that is just unbelievable. And that, to me, is an indication of what's coming to New Zealand if we do not rise, as you say. And I just want to refer to Ubuntu in South Africa, and what it means for me is that we're all connected and we all need each other. And if one decides to go off on its own, it actually affects the whole, the corporate kind of humanity is affected by that one going and doing his own. We need to come back to community, because we've been isolated by these entities that want to rob us and want to steal us, and I believe want to cull us. Because if you go and have a look at the eugenics, at what Bill Gates is on about, he believes there is too many people on this earth and that we need to be culled. Now, I do not believe that at all. I believe there is too much greed on this earth, and the greed needs to be culled.
Yes, we need to be working for a greater whole. And thank you for Ubuntu, because Aroha from Maori, and it is unconditional love. It is to be able to give and share and realize that we come from something so profound. And one Maori person once told me many years ago, he said, Tim, do you know what Aroha means? And I told him how I thought, and he said, yes, but there's another level. What is mine is yours, and what is yours is mine. That is such a high level, we can only work to attain that at some time in the future. Let's just, in the meantime, work together.
Yes, absolutely. And that is really talking about community being more important than the I, the we being more important than the I.
Excellent. Thank you. Jacques, I want to say thank you very much. I want to say buy a donkey. I mean, very good. So look forward to having listeners be more involved in their world of today and tomorrow.
Yes, and thank you so much for the opportunity, Tim. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, thank you. Okay, Jacques, good. That was Jacques Wendell, helping us along and bringing through a new information about what's happening in the world. And I want to recap, because this is the story. Lots of people are now realizing that New Zealand is an extension of the City of London, that we are a corporation just like Australia and quite possibly Canada as well, that belongs to Whitehall and Westminster, the City of London. Now, I want to be able to follow a few little things. First, if you want to look at another way of taking a more independent viewpoint on your own life, I would go to solutionsempowerment.com. Solutionsempowerment.com. I went to them because I ended up signing an agreement 3 times that I sent it to the Prime Minister of New Zealand, and I wrote this agreement in lowercase. My name in lowercase, and I've told them that I will not I do not want to comply to being vaccinated. And these three letters have been sent to the Prime Minister, and as far as I'm concerned, allows the Prime Minister to know that I do not consent to having anything put into my arm or put in the sacredness of my body temple without my permission. And the other thing I want to be able to tell you, that in New Zealand here, the Treasury in this country has a direct line to the US State Department. Did you know that? I found that out some years ago. And also that Donald Trump, very recently, in the last so many months, has taken over the Federal Reserve in New York in the United States of America. It's a private corporation, and what he's doing, he is reasserting the U.S. independence from the City of London, as well as independence from this private banking group. There's also reports that Prince Charles, in the last few months, has been crowned king to replace his mother, Queen Elizabeth. So things have changed, and they continue to change. Decide to network. Use every letter you write, every conversation you